Welcome to That Was Radio, where we explore all aspects of the golden age of radio, not just the radio programs themselves, but also the personalities and events that shaped those programs. I'm Leon Smothers for WMKY, Morehead State Public Radio. In this program, we're going to look at how American Christmas traditions developed and how the holiday was celebrated on radio, especially during the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. Not many people in the United States realize how different Christmas as we celebrate it today is from Christmases of the early 1800s. For most Americans back then, Christmas was not a festive occasion or an occasion for giving gifts. It was primarily a day to go to church for an observance of Christ's birth. One of the people that most influenced the transformation of the holiday was Washington Irving. Irving is considered by many scholars to be the first truly American writer and was certainly the first to be widely acclaimed in Europe. He is better known today for his short stories Rip Van Winkle and The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, but he also wrote a good deal about Christmas. In 1809, Irving published Knickerbocker's History of New York, a sort of satirical account of the time when the Dutch ruled the colony. In it, he mentions traditions that were unique to the Dutch colonists. For instance, the history included numerous mentions of St. Nicholas, who was the patron saint of New York, and it mentioned the way the original New Yorkers envisioned St. Nicholas as based on Dutch traditions, some of which later came to be associated with Santa Claus. St. Nicholas was said to have smoked a pipe that never went out. The legends also said that each year he would come riding over the tops of the trees in his wagon to bring presents to children. And St. Nicholas was known to make a pact of secrecy by laying his finger beside his nose and winking hard with one eye. Irving also described some of the traditions of St. Nicholas Day, December the 6th. He said that many New York families of the time still observe the tradition of hanging stockings beside the chimney on St. Nicholas Eve, and the stockings would always be filled the next morning because, as Irving said, the good St. Nicholas has ever been a great giver of gifts, particularly to children. Although Irving always refers to the saint by the English name St. Nicholas, the Dutch used the name Sinterklaas, from which, as you can probably guess, we get the name Santa Claus. Irving influenced America's observance of Christmas even further when he published his sketchbook in 1819. He was living in England at the time and wrote fondly, if idealistically, about the holiday traditions he found there and that he thought were disappearing in the United States. In one chapter, he describes the generous Christmas spirit of a British estate where the owner invited workers into his home to celebrate the holiday with his family. Irving also wrote of dinners and dancing and the singing of carols. He mentioned the English Christmas decorations and the hanging of mistletoe. Irving's homage to the holiday resonated with many in the United States who began to embrace his vision of Christmas, so that within a decade of the publication of Irving's sketchbook, New Yorkers greeted each other with Christmas wishes and the stores on Broadway extended their hours to accommodate the increase in Christmas shoppers. Over the next 25 years, there were three other publications that had significant impact in shaping American Christmases. In 1821, New York printer William Gilley published a children's booklet with a poem about Santa Claus and an illustration of Santa on a rooftop inside a sleigh that was being pulled by a single reindeer. Then just 2 years later, in 1823, reindeer figured prominently in one of the most significant Christmas stories ever. That was when Clement Clark Moore first published his poem, A Visit from St. Nicholas. In it, as we are about to hear, Moore picks up from Gilly the idea of St. Nicholas with a sleigh pulled by reindeer and landing on a rooftop, but sets the number of reindeer at 8 and gives each one a name. Here is Perry Como, a popular singer and media personality of the 40s, 50s, and 60s, with his reading of A Visit from St. Nicholas.
Was the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings all hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all safe in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles his coursers they came, as he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer, now Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donner and Blitzen. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled, his dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard of his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of his pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round little belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk. And laying a finger alongside his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
In addition to naming the reindeer, Moore includes from the Dutch tradition that Santa Claus smoked a pipe and placed a finger beside his nose and winked as a gesture of, "Let's just keep this between us." But Moore's poem added some new elements to the American conception of St. Nicholas, including the first time he's called St. Nick, his rosy cheeks and round belly, the idea of access through the chimney, and moving St. Nick's visit to Christmas Eve rather than the evening before St. Nicholas Day, which was December the 6th. Moore's poem quickly became a children's classic, and in addition to reshaping the concept of St. Nicholas, it further boosted the idea of giving gifts at Christmas time. The spirit of Christmas and of generosity received a further boost in 1843 with the publication of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, which was successful in bringing Christmas spirits not only to the hard-hearted miser within the story, but to many others who have read the story or seen it performed since then. Dickens' tale was another significant contributor in changing the way Christmas was celebrated. Within a few years of its publication, Christmas began to be seen as a major holiday, where it had been largely ignored just a few decades before. Christmas became a 1 or 2 day celebration rather than the traditional 12 days recalled in the seemingly endless song. Turkey became a traditional dish of the season. Before A Christmas Carol, turkey was not common on Christmas tables. After the book, it became the meat of choice for the holiday. There were several other 19th century contributions to our modern Christmas tradition that I will mention briefly. Many popular Christmas songs were written during the middle of the 19th century. As examples, It Came Upon a Midnight Clear was written in 1847, Jingle Bells in 1856, and We Three Kings in 1857. The image that we now associate with Santa Claus was created by Thomas Nast, a cartoonist for Harper's Weekly, who did illustrations through most of the latter half of the 19th century. He is also credited with making the North Pole the location of Santa's home and workshop, and with Santa's having elves as his toy makers. The sending of Christmas cards became popular in the United States during the late 1870s. And finally, Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus was published as an editorial in the New York Sun on September the 21st, 1897. That brings us up to the early era of radio, where on Christmas Day in 1906, Reginald Fessenden made the first public voice radio broadcast ever from his studio at Brant Rock, Massachusetts. It was a short broadcast, consisting only of his playing O Holy Night on his violin and reading a portion of the Christmas story from the Bible. However, it was an auspicious start, and thereafter, during the Golden Age, most radio programs did a Christmas show. Probably the most popular radio Christmas tradition during the Golden Age was Lionel Barrymore's annual appearance in A Christmas Carol. Barrymore was a famous actor of stage, screen, and radio. His primary association with Christmas today is from his role as the greedy banker Mr. Potter in the perennial movie favorite It's a Wonderful Life. But in the heyday of radio, everyone looked forward to his annual broadcast of the Dickens classic. From 1934 through 1953, Barrymore brought the world's most famous miser to life every Christmas, except for 2 years, once when his wife died, and once when he was ill and Orson Welles stepped in for him. Barrymore died before Christmas in 1954. The following is an abridged version of Dickens' story that was produced on record by MGM in 1947. It features Lionel Barrymore as Scrooge and is narrated by Richard Hale. The music was composed by Sam Timberg, and the album was directed by Daley Paskman. You're listening to a Christmas episode of That Was Radio on WMKY, Morehead State Public Radio, 90.3 FM.
Once there was a dreadful old man named Ebenezer Scrooge. Oh, he was a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, clutching old sinner. Scrooge had been in partnership for many years with Jacob Marley, so his firm was known as Scrooge and Marley. But Marley had been dead for 7 years. Yes, Marley was dead, dead as a doornail. And old Scrooge lived alone and disliked everybody. He had a clerk in his office named Bob Cratchit. And he only paid the poor fellow, who had a wife and 4 children, a wage that scarcely fed them. The meager office that Cratchit sat in was like a cold, dismal little cell. When Cratchit stopped to warm his hands over the burnt-out coal, Scrooge looked up over his glasses and said,
"Cratchit, Get on with your work.
Well, you see, sir, my fire is almost out and my hands are numb. I need another bit of coal to keep warm, sir.
How many times have I told you I won't have you burning up my coal as if it were rubbish?
But, sir...
Back to your work.
Yes, sir.
It was Christmas Eve, and into the office of Scrooge and Marley popped Scrooge's nephew, Fred.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Humbug.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Oh, come now, what right have you to be dismal? You're rich enough.
Humbug.
Oh, don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older, not an hour richer. If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips would be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stick of holly through his heart.
Oh, Uncle.
Keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
But you don't keep it.
Well, let me leave it alone then. Much good may it do you. Much good it ever has done you.
But, Uncle, Christmas is the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their hearts freely. And therefore, Uncle, although it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good. And I say, God bless it.
Good for you, lad.
Another word out of you, Cratchit, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation.
Oh, don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
Good afternoon.
Oh, I'm sorry with all my heart to find you so determined. So, a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
Well, sir, it's...
It's what?
It's shutting up time,
sir. Yes.
And, sir, I was wondering whether you would allow me the day off. That is, if it's convenient, sir.
It's not convenient and it's not fair. If I were to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself very ill-used, wouldn't you? And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
But it's Christmas only once a year, sir.
Christmas. Nothing but a poor excuse to pick a man's pocket every December the 25th. And you, a clerk with 15 shillings a week and a wife and family, talking about a Merry Christmas. Blah.
May I have tomorrow off, sir?
I suppose you must. But be here all the earlier the next morning.
I will, sir. I will indeed, sir. Thank you, sir.
Late that evening, Scrooge left his dreary office and went home to his dismal chambers. Chambers once occupied by his dear partner, Marley. It was dark, and when he reached the house, he was amazed to notice that the knocker on the door was...
I could have sworn that was Marley's face in the knocker. Ah, pooh, rubbish, nothing to it.
So up the stairs he went as boldly as he could and entered his dark, gloomy rooms. Darkness was cheap, and so he liked it, the old miser. Inside his rooms, everything appeared as it should be.
Nobody under the table. Nobody under the sofa. Nobody in the closet.
And nobody in his dressing gown, which was hanging up in a suspicious attitude against the wall. Quite satisfied, he locked the door, took off his coat, put on his dressing jacket and his pointed nightcap, and sat down before the fire to take his meager gruel. As he sat looking at the low fire, he suddenly realized that every tile about the grate had on it a copy of old Marley's face, staring at him.
Humbug. Humbug. Don't believe it. Rubbish.
Scrooge walked across the room. After several turns, he sat down again. He threw his head back in the chair. There was an old bell high up in the rooms, and it began to ring, while a noise downstairs made him start.
What's that? Who's there? Who is it? Who is it?
Suddenly, right through the wall, and then, behold, inside the room, Scrooge saw before his very eyes...
Marley! What What do you want with me?
Much.
Who are you?
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley. Don't you believe me?
I don't.
What evidence would you have of my reality beyond that of your own senses?
Oh, because the little thing affects the senses. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more gravy than grave about you, whatever you are.
Oh!
Oh, mercy! Dreadful apparition, why do you trouble me?
Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?
Oh, I do, I must. But why do spirits walk the earth? And why do they come to me?
It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide and do good. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. Oh!
No, please don't do that. You're shackled. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. Is its pattern strange to you?
Jacob Marley, tell me more. Speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I've none to give, Ebenezer Scrooge. In life, my spirit never roved beyond the narrow limits of our changing whole, and weary journeys lie before me. Hear me, my time is nearly gone.
I will. But don't be hard on me, Jacob.
I am here tonight to warn you that you've yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate, Ebenezer.
You always were a good friend to me. Thank you.
Hear what I say. You will be haunted by three spirits. Without their visit, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls one. Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and remember what has passed between us.
When the ghost vanished in the dark, bleak night, Scrooge denounced the whole thing.
Bah! I won't believe it. The whole business is rubbish. Humbug.
Then he went to bed and was soon asleep. When Scrooge awoke, it was still dark. The chimes of a neighboring church had just struck 12.
12 o'clock? Why, it was past 2 when I went to bed. That clock's wrong. An icicle must have got into the works. 12. It isn't possible I could have slept through the whole day and far into another night. It isn't possible anything's happened to the sun, and it's 12 noon.
He scrambled out of bed and groped his way to the window. All he could make out was that it was still very foggy and extremely cold. So back to bed he went and thought and thought and thought.
He said he'd be here when the bell tolled one. When the bell tolled one. Humbug. 1 o'clock. The hour itself and nothing else. I knew it.
Suddenly a light flashed up in the room, and the first of the promised spirit visitors stood before him.
Are you the spirit whose coming was foretold me?
I am.
Who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No, your past.
Well, what brings you here?
Your welfare.
Oh, I'm much obliged for keeping an old man from his sleep.
Your reclamation, then. Take heed. Rise and walk with me.
But I'm mortal and I'm liable to fall.
Bear but a touch of my hand. There. And you shall be upheld in more than this.
As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall of the room. The city had vanished entirely. They stood upon an open country road with fields on either side.
Do you know where you are?
Good heaven. I was raised in this place. I was a boy here.
You recollect the way?
I could walk in blindfold.
Strange you had forgotten it for so many years.
Lead on, spirit. I'll follow.
Come. Do you see that schoolhouse? Do you remember?
Yes.
Of course you do. You see, the school is not quite deserted, even though it is Christmas Eve. A solitary child neglected by his friends is left there still. Do you know who that boy is?
Of course I do. It's me. It's my own lost boyhood. My poor forgotten self as I used to be. Poor lonely boy. I wish...
Wish what?
Nothing. It's too late now.
Too late for what?
Nothing. Last night, a boy was singing a Christmas carol at my door. I should have liked to have given him something. That's all.
Come. Let us see another Christmas.
You're listening to That Was Radio, where we're featuring one of the great Christmas traditions from radio's golden age, Lionel Barrymore as Scrooge in A Christmas Carol from 1947. This is WMKY 90.3 FM. I'm Leon Smothers.
The spirit led the way to many scenes that Scrooge had long forgotten. He was shown some happy Christmases of long ago when he was a youth. And best of all, the spirit took him to the warehouse where he had been an apprentice. Scrooge peeped in, and when he saw an old gentleman in a Welsh wig sitting at a high desk, he cried out,
"Why, it's old Fezziwig! Bless his heart, it's old Fezziwig alive again!" And there's Dick Wilkins. Oh, Dick was attached to me. Poor Dick, dear Dick.
Yo-ho, my boys, no more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas, Ebenezer, let's have the shutters up.
Quicker than you can say, Jack Robinson, Mr. Fezziwig.
As good as done.
The floor swept and watered.
Yes, sir.
The lamps stripped.
Yes, sir.
And the fuel on the fire.
Yes, sir.
Hilly ho, Minette, clear away and let's have lots of room. Hilly ho, Dick, get up, Ebenezer.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
In came a fiddler with a music book. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In they all came, one after another. And so the jolly party went on until 11 o'clock, when they parted as happy could be.
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Wasn't Fezziwig a silly man?
A silly man? Why, he was a wonderful man. A fine fellow.
What's the matter?
Oh, nothing in particular.
Something, I think.
No. I'd like to be able to say a word to my clerk, Bob Cratchit, that's all.
My time grows short. Quick, let's be off.
Now the spirit took him to another Christmas, when old Marley was lying at death's door.
Oh, spirit, show me no more. Conduct me home. Why do you delight in torturing me?
One shadow more.
No more. I don't want to see it. Show me no more. Spirit, remove me from this place.
I told you these were shadows of the things that have been. That they are what they are. Do not blame me.
Remove me. I can't bear it. Take me back and haunt me no longer. Take me back.
There's no saying what else the spirit of Christmas past would have shown him had Scrooge not managed to get hold of the extinguisher which the spirit had been carrying. By pressing this down, Scrooge put out the light of the spirit like a snuffed candle. Then he reeled into bed and sank into a heavy sleep.
O'clock. What's that? What's that ghostly light shining through the next room? I'll shut it out.
Ebenezer Scrooge. Come in and know me better, man.
What do you want with me? And what have you done to my room here? This is my room, but it's undergone a strange transformation. This holly and mistletoe. What does it mean, and who are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas present. Come closer. Fear me not.
Spirit, conduct me where you will. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it.
Touch my robe.
Gladly.
Now, what do you see?
I see bright colored lights, gaiety, children on sleds playing in the snow.
Do you see that house over there?
The one with the Christmas wreath on the door? Of course. It's the humble home of my clerk, Bob Cratchit.
He's carrying Tiny Tim, his little son. See the boy's little crutch and his helpless limbs. How tenderly his father holds him. Let's go closer.
A Merry Christmas to us all, my dear.
A Merry Christmas to us all.
Merry Christmas. God bless us, everyone.
That was Tiny Tim. See how close he sits to his father's side. And look, he's holding Tiny Tim's withered little hands in his. He fears of losing the lad.
Tell me, Spirit, if Tiny Tim will live.
I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
Oh, no, no, kind Spirit. Say he'll live. Say he'll live.
But the Spirit whirled him on to many homes and places, showing him misery and want as well as happiness. Then the Spirit vanished, and a new and different figure appeared. It came slowly and silently toward him. It was shrouded in a deep black garment, which left nothing of it visible save one outstretched hand. This was the third and last of his ghostly visitors. Scrooge braced himself and said,
"Yes, yes, yes, I know. You're the ghost of Christmas yet to come. I fear you more than any specter I've seen. But I know your purpose is to do me good. I'm prepared to bear you company. Lead on, spirits, lead on."
The phantom moved, and Scrooge followed, and at length the ghost of Christmas yet to come brought him to a neglected gravestone.
What's this? These awful weeds. I can hardly see. Whose name's written on this crumbled stone? Why, it's Ebenezer Scrooge. Me. Oh, no, Spirit, no, no. Spirit, hear me. I'm not the man I was. I'll not be the man I must have been. Good Spirit, pity me. Assure me I may yet change these shadows you've shown me by an altered light. I'll honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. Oh, tell me I may wipe off the writing of this terrible stone.
In his agony, he caught the spectral hand, but the Spirit repulsed him. As Scrooge held up his hands in a last prayer to have his fate reversed, he saw an alteration in the phantom shape. It began to shrink. It collapsed. And then...
This bedpost. Yes, yes. Why, it's my own. This bed, it's my own bed. My very own. This room, my own rooms. Oh, bless it all. I live the past, the present, and the future. I will. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven and the Christmas time be praised for this. I say it on my knees, old Jacob, on my knees. I'm as light as a feather. I'm happy as an angel. I'm merry as a schoolboy. Hey, hello outside there. What is today?
Today? Why, it's Christmas Day.
Christmas Day! I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. Hello, my fine fella.
Hello.
Do you know the poulterer's shop in the next street, the one in the corner?
Indeed, I do, sir.
Oh, an intelligent boy. A remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there?
The little one?
No, not the little one. No, no, no. The big one.
What? The one as big as me?
What a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Yes, my lad.
It's hanging there now.
Is it? Go on and buy it.
Are you joking?
No. I'm in earnest. Go and buy it. And tell him to bring it here, that I may give him the directions where to take it. Come back with the man, and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes, I'll give you half a crown.
I'll be back with it as quick as a shot, sir.
Look at him, Ron. I'll send it to Bob Cratchit. He shan't know who sent it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. I'll send the porter with it in the cab so Cratchit will have it in time. No, then I'll hie myself to my nephew's home. Will they be surprised to see me?
Dressed in his best, Scrooge at last got into the streets. People were pouring forth. Scrooge greeted everyone with a delightful smile and...
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas, Mr. Scrooge!
And Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas! Merry
Christmas! He went to church and gave a large donation for the poor. He walked gaily about the streets. He never dreamed that any walk, that anything could give him so much happiness. In the afternoon, he arrived at his nephew's house.
What can I do for you, sir?
Is your master at home, my dear?
Yes, sir.
Where is he, my love?
Why, bless my soul, who's that?
It's I, your Uncle Scrooge. I've come to dinner. Will you let me in, friend?
Of course, Uncle. Make yourself at home. We'll have a wonderful party, wonderful games, and wonderful happiness.
The next morning, Scrooge was early at the office. If he could just catch Bob Cratchit coming late, that was the thing he'd set his heart upon. And he did it. Yes, he did. Cratchit was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see him coming. Cratchit was on his stool in a jiffy. Then Scrooge came into the room.
Hello. What do you mean by coming here this time of day?
I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time.
Yes, indeed you are.
Oh, it's only once a year, sir. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
Now, I'll tell you what, my friend. I'm not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore, I'm about to raise your salary.
Oh.
A Merry Christmas, Bob.
Oh, a Merry Christmas to you,
a
sir.
A Merry Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, that I've given you for many a year. I'll endeavor to assist your struggling family.
Oh, sir.
Make up the fires, my boy, and buy another scuttle of coal before you dart another eye, Bob Cratchit.
Yes, sir.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all and more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was the second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city in the good old world. He had no further experience with spirits, but lived a happy life ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if anybody did.
And may that truly be said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed...
God bless us. Everyone.
Yes, Tiny Tim. God bless us, everyone.
You're listening to That Was Radio on WMKY 90.3 FM, where we've just heard an abridged version of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol that was recorded and released originally by MGM Records in 1947. It featured Lionel Barrymore as Scrooge, and Richard Hale was the narrator. Perhaps the person who had the most impact on Christmas in the United States during the classic radio era was Gene Autry. Autry was a star of cowboy movies and a multi-talented entertainer of the mid-20th century. In addition to radio and television, he appeared in 93 movies, wrote or co-wrote over 300 songs, and made more than 600 recordings, with total sales exceeding 100 million copies. In 1947, Autry and Oakley Haldeman wrote Here Comes Santa Claus, which Autry then recorded for Columbia Records. The song was an immediate success. It sold over a million copies and became a top 10 hit on both the pop and country music charts. Autry's biggest impact on Christmas traditions came in 1949 when he recorded Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which was written by Johnny Marks, based on the story of the same name that had been published by the Montgomery Ward Company in 1939. The record went to number one on the U.S. charts the week of Christmas 1949, selling almost 2 million copies the first season. It is still one of the all-time most popular Christmas recordings, second only to Bing Crosby's White Christmas. Here is a remastered recording of Gene Autry telling the story of Rudolph.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen, but do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee. Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history. Say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee. Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.
In 1950, the year after he recorded Rudolph, Autry introduced Frosty the Snowman, which became another very popular Christmas song. It was written by Jack Rollins and Steve Nelson. Rollins and Nelson sent the song to Autry primarily because of the success he had with recording Rudolph the year before. Although Autry's version sold well, Jimmy Durante's version, also recorded in 1950, actually was more popular and sold more copies. The stories of both Rudolph and Frosty were made into television specials in the 1960s and have become Christmas classics in their own right. In 1953, Gene Autry recorded still another Christmas song. This time it was Up on the Housetop, written by Benjamin Hanby in 1864, the second oldest secular Christmas song, outdone only by Jingle Bells. While it didn't make the charts, Up on the Housetop has still established itself as one of the classic children's Christmas songs. In closing our discussion of radio Christmas traditions, I want to mention one other performer that had a large impact on the way we celebrate Christmas today. Bing Crosby became a popular recording artist and movie star in the early 1930s. He got his first radio program in 1936, and from then through 1962, he did a special Christmas broadcast each year. Along the way, he began doing Christmas specials on television. He appeared in his first Christmas TV special as a guest of Frank Sinatra in 1957. His own annual holiday TV tradition began in 1961 and continued through the year of his death 1977. One of the things Crosby is best remembered for today is his recordings of Irving Berlin's classic White Christmas, which is the all-time best-selling single recording. White Christmas was first recorded in May of 1942 and released in July as part of the soundtrack of the movie Holiday Inn. The song struck a chord with a nation in the midst of World War II. Both the families at home and the troops abroad found it comforting to reminisce about Christmases in the past where things were merry and bright. White Christmas went to number one on Billboard's chart of best-selling retail records on October 31, 1942, and spent 11 consecutive weeks there. The following year, White Christmas won the Academy Award for the Best Original Song and returned to Billboard's top 10 in every subsequent holiday season through 1949. Bing Crosby's version of the song has sold an estimated 100 million copies worldwide, with other artists' versions selling an estimated 50 million more. Here is a Christmas greeting from Bing during his 1947 Philco show, followed by his famous Christmas song.
Say, the goose really hangs high here tonight. Mm-hmm. What's your Christmas Eve message for 1947, Ken?
Just the season's greetings to our friends everywhere on behalf of Philco, its distributors and dealers.
Wonderful. Let's parlay that with a Happy New Year for 1948.
Yes, from all of us on Philco Radio Time, sincere good wishes for the Yuletide and the coming year.
My, we're certainly full of greetings tonight, aren't we? Nothing to sell?
Not a thing.
Isn't this sensational? Jolly Noel from us all. I guess White Christmas could stand one last delivery before the season ends.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write, may your days be merry.
This is Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY 90.3 FM. You're listening to a Christmas episode of That Was Radio. Just at the end of the golden age of radio, there began another Christmas tradition that I think is worth mentioning. Manufacturers and department stores offered inexpensive albums of Christmas songs under their corporate labels. Holiday shoppers at Grant's or JCPenney's department stores, True Value Hardware, or any of several tire stores could get these Christmas albums free or at very little cost. And it wasn't just retailers that commissioned Christmas albums. Similar records were also produced with labels for the Singer Sewing Machine Company and Zenith Electronics, for example. These albums were compilations assembled by major labels such as RCA and Columbia, and they featured many noted performers such as the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, Julie Andrews, Tony Bennett, and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Many of the cuts came from those performers' own Christmas recordings, but some were made expressly for a specific company's album. A variation of this tradition has carried over into the digital recording era. Now shoppers in Starbucks, Barnes & Noble, Target, and other retailers can pick up Christmas CDs that are exclusive to that store. To close out this program, I'm going to play as examples a couple of songs that come from some of these vintage LPs. The first cut will be Jolly Old St. Nicholas, sung by Maurice Chevalier, from the 1965 Goodyear Tire Christmas album. This will be followed by one of my favorites, a medley of Christmas songs by Tony Bennett that was included on A&P's Christmas Greeting, Volume 3.
Jolly old St. Nicholas, lean your ear this way. Don't you tell a single soul what I'm going to say. Christmas Eve is coming soon, now you dear old man. Whisper what you'll bring to me, tell me if you can. When the clock is striking 12, when I'm fast asleep, down the chimney broad and black, with your pack you'll creep. All the stockings you will find hanging in a row, mine will be the shortest one, you'll be sure to know. Johnny wants a pair of skates, Susie wants a sleigh, Nelly wants a picture book, yellow, blue and red. Yes, now I think I'll leave to you what to give the rest. Choose for me, dear Santa Claus, you will know the best, eh? Johnny wants a pair of skates, Susie wants a sled, yes, Nelly wants a picture book, yellow, blue, and red, yes. Now I think I'll leave to you what to give the rest. Choose for me, dear Santa Claus, you will know the best. Oh, yes, you will.
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings to you and all of your kin. Good tidings for Christmas and a
spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
Hear those jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride a one-horse open sleigh.
Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
Does it fall from skies above? Is it underneath the willow tree that I've been dreaming of? Where is she? My eyes to see, will I ever know the sweet hello that's meant for only me? Who can say
that was a Christmas medley by Tony Bennett from the A&P Christmas Greeting album, Volume 3. For those who are not familiar with the now-defunct A&P brand, it was the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, primarily a grocery chain that was, for a while, the world's largest retailer. That brings us to the end of our program. You've been listening to a Christmas broadcast of That Was Radio, where we discuss old-time radio programs and the people and events that shape them. I hope you've enjoyed this program and will join me again next time. I'm Leon Smothers, and this is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY 90.3 FM.